Hello and welcome back to The Deep Dive. An interesting start to the podcast today. I'm joined by our usual panel, of course, the lovely Erin Slaven. Hello, Erin, how are you?
Hello, just the one time I'll be saying that today. Thanks for having me back. Good to be here.
Lovely to see you. Frankie, how are you? Frankie Mitchell's here. Nice to see you.
Hi, I'm good. We've got things to say, don't we?
We do have things to say. Ruth Boyle is also here. Hi, Ruth.
Hello. I feel like I'm kind of like that wee person that stands behind the bully at school. I'm letting Erin and Frankie take the hit, and I'm just going to be waving my fist in the background.
And some people might know what we're talking about when they hear this.
In my head all day.
It is, of course, the midweek bounce taking pot shots. I'm not quite sure where this all started. I think it was, is it Paul Carlin's fault? Is it the midweek bounce's fault? I don't know. But I'm going to...
Nothing is Paul Carlin's fault. He's an angel. Nothing. He's correct. Absolved of all responsibility.
Correct.
I agree with that.
And I'm going to hand straight over to Erin for the official deep dive rebuttal.
Thanks, Claire. So first and foremost, I do feel I was, unfairly singled out in some regards. I was called misguidedly a hun. Absolute slander. I guess that would say more about Gal for having a hun on his podcast. But anyway, these things happen. I was taught growing up that sometimes when people display a sort of level of grief towards you, that it reflects jealousy. And as you will know, that's one of the cardinal sins. So I'm not going to abuse them, but I will pray for them. Firstly, I'd like to address the hun patter. So after the hello, hello, it's good to be back the other week, I thought I was losing my mind because this genuinely was patter on like Celtic Twitter and all that for ages, and I thought, have I dreamt this? Then the public condemnation last night made me go on Twitter and seek out some evidence, and I have receipts from other Celtic fans using this lingo, which I believe was first used by Rangers fans thinking they were like on the up, and then we've just flung it back at them. So I've got receipts which I am happy after recording to send to Gal, Bowden, Brian via email, Telegram, Owl, whatever. Happy to do that. But I understand that's maybe a bit too niche, a bit too hipster Celtic when they three are like Celtic dads. So that's fine. I'll pray for them again. Also note the use of the term toddlers, which I feel I'm probably like equipped to comment on given that I do look like a toddler. I mean, fair enough. But again, I sense a degree of envy towards the youth that I display. Because as a 23-year-old woman, I am, I'd say, a third of their age. So I understand it's a sore subject. Again, I will pray for them. Finally, I know the passive-aggressive acknowledgement of the fact that we are lucky enough to have a weekly slot on The Cynic, right? Again, notes of jealousy coming through. And if I can be so frank, we weren't planning to be here every week, right? We just have so much fun. We were welcomed. People like to listen to us and we like to chat. So here we are. We're here every week now. We love it, giving people what they want. And I regret, truly regret, like our utmost sympathy for the midweek bounce because they have not yet reached that stick-on place in the starting 11 every week. They're on every, 40 weeks or something? Fine. Okay, I'll pray for them. I would like to leave you with this from the New Testament. And I'd appreciate if you're ready to hear the music when I'm finished. Those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. Claire, cue the music, please.
Excellently said, Erin. Well done. So the basic gist of this is we've said our piece, you've represented us, we're praying for them, we're drawing a line under it, and we're moving on, and we're just going to do what we do.
They go low, we go high.
Yeah.
Well, we also outnumber them quite a lot.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, I bring the average age of this group up, so that's... Anyway, there's a lot. That's that dealt with. We'll just move on. Anything else to add, Ruth and Frankie, to Erin's marvelous.
It's like to say when the feminist revolution comes, Paul Carlin will be saved. He'll be spared. He can continue on.
And we'll have him. We'll have him as a guest on the podcast at some point. Apart from that, apart from us all having to suffer these slanderous jibes, how are we doing this week? How is everyone?
I'm good. I'm feeling weird about it being International Week. I think a lot of others have said that some people seem to be really glad because they can't be arsed watching Celtic right now. And then others are a bit gutted because like, you just want to get back at the games and try and do something. I feel like, I don't know, we're kind of like just poking the team with a stick right now. Like, please just do something. But yeah, feeling weird about it.
It's weird, isn't it, as well? Because you kind of feel like there's nothing to latch onto when there's no football. Like, you know, I thought the weekly this week was really good and it gave me loads of insight into starting to really understand where we were with
it was, yeah.
The tactics and the kind of shape and all the players' understanding of that. And I guess, I want to see that start to play out and see, kind of take some of what they've said and have a look at what the players are doing and see how it all tallies up. Erin and Ruth, how are you guys, football wise and life wise?
Kind of feel the same as Frankie, actually. And on the reaction, I was saying that I didn't want it to be an international break, but maybe the space has been quite good, I think, maybe. And I might come back to Celtic with newfound love again. But as we were saying on the international deep dives, that just all the like COVID rumours are just putting me on edge already. So that's kind of ruining any chill that I'm getting from there being a break from Celtic, because you're just in panic mode about what's going to happen to the squad during this time.
Yeah. Erin?
Yeah, I feel the same. It's a bit of a conflicting one, because on one hand, you're like, I'm sort of glad to just have a break from Celtic for a while. But then similarly, after that result on Sunday, you'd have kind of liked to have kept any sort of momentum off the back of that. So yeah, I mean, to be honest, I'm enjoying it. That is terrible, but I'm just actually enjoying the reset. I think it's a good opportunity for us all just to take a step back and hopefully,
yeah,
for Neil Lennon, take a step back as well.
Yeah. Cool.
And hopefully get back and back with some new ideas.
So the subject we've kind of settled on for today to talk about is Celtic managers. So we just thought that given this wee break we're having, there isn't actually any football to kind of necessarily talk about, at least football that hasn't already been talked about a lot. We could talk about Celtic managers and kind of go back through Celtic history and also think about the future and think about like what qualities we have admired, do admire and would admire or would want in a Celtic manager. And we sort of thought when we were doing the rundown for this that we'd think about the five key qualities that we might think about. We're just going to have a discussion and see if they kind of emerge throughout that. I'm going to start by talking about favourite manager moments. Obviously, we will probably be focusing more on the recent past because, as previously mentioned, we are a young panel. I'm a young Celtic fan in terms of how long I've been a Celtic fan. So my experience of Celtic managers is very limited. So I'm going to rely on you lot quite a lot here. But I'm going to come to you and ask you for your favourite manager moments. Ruth, I'm going to start with you.
This was quite hard. But I've settled on Martin O'Neill this is a very specific moment, but in general, Martin O'Neill's jumping is my favourite manager moment, because that was just synonymous with Celtic when I was a kid. And like so many of my very early Celtic memories involve Martin O'Neill jumping multiple feet off the ground. And most notably was in the demolition derby game, the 6-2 game. And like, obviously that was quite early on in Martin O'Neill's tenure and just still getting used to like the eccentricities of his character, I guess. And just seeing him jumping on the touchline just filled me with great joy. And when I think back in terms of like early games I was watching on TV or, you know, watching highlights as a family and things, Martin O'Neill jumping off the ground is part of the majority of those childhood memories. So I think that's something that I'll always look back on with glee. So I had to go with that, I think.
I've literally had that written in my notes. My notes.
That's great.
I had written Martin O'Neill's wee jump celebration. We'd like shove his two fists in the air. I don't know how he managed to get so much height.
No, I know. It's amazing. Quite impressive.
Yeah. I have to say
when I like quite often I'm like Googling images for stuff I'm doing for the podcast, and if I'm Googling images of Martin O'Neill, you do get a lot of animation from the pictures that you get back from an image search of Martin O'Neill. So even though I didn't see it in real time, I kind of know what you mean by that.
And it's just like the 6'2 game, he was in his wee white polo shirt, and just like that image, you know, I can just see it so vividly because it's just so synonymous with Celtic of that era and with Martin O'Neill. So yeah, I'm glad that Frankie agrees and we're in solidarity with Martin.
So it's like the jumping in general rather than a specific moment.
Yeah, I think so. Well, Martin, I mean, we're going to come on to talk about Martin O'Neill and how much we all love him, but just Martin O'Neill's tenure was obviously a great time. And that was kind of the period where I was old enough at that stage to understand more of what was going on with Celtic. And obviously up until the point we had Martin O'Neill as manager, it had been pretty stop-start in my lifetime in terms of like very short tenure managers. So you were never like giving yourself fully over to a manager and being like, that is my man. Mm-hmm. Whereas Martin O'Neill was my first manager in my lifetime where I was like, to quote Ed Slavin, I would die for you. But I just like just loved Martin O'Neill. And, you know, my granny was a Celtic fan as well. And she, you know, loved Martin O'Neill, would fully have left my granda for Martin O'Neill, I think. And when he was out on the steps, when he was announced as manager, like my dad was talking about this yesterday, my granny just like fully went full board for Martin, that she was like, no, he is going to do wonderful things. And I buy into everything that he says. So as a Boyle family, we were fully behind Martin O'Neill. So it was just overall very good time.
I'm getting a bit worried about the number of people that Erin Slavin is starting to say that she would die for, to be honest.
I know. Well, we said last night, I've got Diego Lax out, Olivia Chaman, and we added Paul Carlin to the list. So I've got three at the moment. I'll need to cap it at maybe five.
Okay, I think so. I think you need a limit.
Yeah.
Paul Carlin, listen to that. You are in very privileged company. Frankie, can I come to you next for your favourite manager moment?
Yeah, so I'm this is also very lighthearted. Didn't happen at an actual game, but I mentioned to you in the chat that little day that one of my favourite moments is Ronnie Dyla dancing with his mum after we beat Rangers 2-0 in the League Cup semi-final. I remember seeing that come about at the time, and it was like circulated all over Twitter, and obviously like games against them had been, you know, the last time we'd played any incarnation of Rangers had been 3 years prior to that, and the fan base was on such a massive high to get that feeling again. I think a lot of people liked to play down, like not playing them didn't matter, but when that came around, like I was absolutely buzzing. And when you see him, that was such a good day, like when you see him on the touchline just as Lee Griffiths shapes up to get that first header, that first goal, Dyla does that thing. I always laugh because my dad does this as well, but he like tries to head it himself and he like jerks his head forward. And that video makes me so happy when I see it. And he was really like giving it with his mum. It was like, it was so funny. I think he'd had a few shandies maybe, but it's so great. Even after full time, I think a lot of people maybe cringe a bit at the Ronnie Roar thing, like maybe a lot did at the time, but I love things like that. I think it's important for fans to feel like they've got some sort of relationship with the manager and where they can share a celebration together, and it makes the fans feel more involved. So maybe we just don't see enough of it, but
yeah,
Dyla having a right good dance with his mum, it was a wholesome good time on a good day. I loved it.
And hopefully, those who were lucky enough to come to our first live show will have seen Christian doing the Ronnie Roar live. There is video of it. I think we've put the video up somewhere as well. But we all have to pray for this pandemic to be over just so that we can have another live show.
Did you see that video as well? Another good Ronnie moment when he's like in Gran Canaria on holiday or something, and he's at this Celtic pub, and they're like, he's on the stage, and they're asking him to do the Ronnie Roar. Yeah. And sorry in advance, Christian, for this awful Norwegian accent, but he like says to the crowd, "Are you fucking ready?" And then he does the Ronnie Roar.
Yes,
and
like, I've seen that. It's amazing.
Just play it on repeat. It's so so good. And again, like Franny says, just good. Wholesome content, I think. Like, yeah, that's great.
Amazing. Erin, I'm coming to you next. What's your favorite manager moment? What have you got for us?
My favorite manager moment was the same as Frankie's. I wrote down the Ronnie Roar, and I know people do find it really cringe and like embarrassing, but I loved it as well. Like, obviously, it was a bit of like a shoddy start when he first came, and we all just really wanted something. And then the first time they done it, when we beat Aberdeen 2-1, I think it was like total last minute winner for Van Dijk. I think that was the one Dyla came out after and said it was like better than sex. And you could just see like this actually prompted one of my qualities that I thought I would like in the next manager. You could just see how much it meant to him, like going right over to the fans, like absolutely yassing, like just hands in the air and literally roaring, literally. And I just remember being, every time he'd done it, whether I was like there at like Celtic Park or wherever, or just watching in the house, like just being so giddy. Like I was like a wee girl every time he'd done it. I absolutely lapped it up. But it also reminded me, it really made me ache for the football, because one of the guys that runs my supporters bus, any time without fail, the guy that drives the bus has got like one of the wee pull down, like kind of like a microphone that looks like a tape recorder. Any time we do, I'll wait till everybody's on, they'll go up the front and do their own roar, like even now, and just Celtic Dapat in action. Like I just, and you know at the time you're like that, oh, but now I've not been there in so long, I'm like, ah, that's the stuff you pure miss. But I just seen how much it kind of meant to Dyla doing the Ronnie Roar. That kind of made me think about how I'd want the next manager to be passionate.
Yeah.
And I don't mean like, I think we often conflate like getting it, like being a Celtic man and being passionate. And I don't think the two are like synonymous. Yeah. And Dyla was an example of that. Like, I don't, we spoke, I mean, Lennon's case in point, I mean, I know we don't want to really talk about him too much, but he is like a Celtic man and he gets it, at least played for the club, he gets it, like has supported Celtic all these years, but that doesn't mean anything if it translates onto the park, whereas people can come in and like be passionate but not smash all the nonsense about, oh, I've watched Celtic since I was a wee guy, and oh, the club means so much to me, it's a real dream, like Rodgers, like you can get people that can come in and still demonstrate passion like Ronnie did without like just being like, oh, well, I'm a Celtic man and I know how important it is. It's just passion and like an actual desire to like get the best out of the club and actually just achieve new heights just in itself, I think.
Yeah. I've written down passion as everyone's been talking, because even when Ruth was talking about Martin O'Neill jumping in the air and like that exuberance, I've written down exuberance, passion, and eccentricity, which you might not, that's, you know, if we were to only pick five, you might want one or two of those, but they kind of all fall under the same umbrella a wee bit for me. And I think Erin's really hit the nail on the head with that conflating of this idea of what it means to be passionate about Celtic and what it means to be passionate about wanting to be good at your job and wanting to, like you say, get the best out of players and get the best out of the club. And like Celtic's, I've discovered, a really easy club to fall in love with. Like if you have that attitude, I think, and it doesn't mean that you've had to, you know, been there right from the beginning, as it were, I guess. Talking of right from the beginning, one of the things I just wanted to briefly touch on was the kind of idea of, obviously, the Lisbon Lions and Jock Steen, and this kind of, he was such a kind of huge figure in the history of Celtic as a manager. I looked it up earlier, and I'm going to ask if you can guess how many trophies Jock Steen won during his, he was one of the longest serving, not the longest serving. Like, there's no shame in not getting it right, because I had to add it all up. Including the European Cup, of course.
I'd be guessing.
Just fling a number at me.
How many years did we have him?
I've got it written down here. He was 65 to 78. So that's what, 13 years?
I'll see 19.
Oh my God, 19 was what I had in my head.
It's a good guess.
I'm pulling it out of
It's a very good guess. It's actually 25.
Oh,
which, that's so weird. 19, me and Frankie are on the same wavelength today. 19 was the number that was floating around.
But like he was there for a long time. He achieved the European success. And it's kind of this, you know, the idea of what a Celtic manager and playing the Celtic way as well. And I wonder if any of you have thoughts on whether that sort of the spectre of Jock Stein, I guess, still looms over managers and teams at the club. Erin?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard for a manager who was so successful, and I mean, the European Cup's just the honour of all honour, doesn't it? I think it's difficult for someone that came and had such success to not have a sort of lasting impact of some degree. And I think even inside the Celtic Park, you see, like, there's quotes of him up, like, football without the fans is nothing, and Celtic jerseys don't shrink to fit an inferior player. And those sort of quotes from him have really, like, not lost a shred of importance for Celtic fans. Like, they're still used as often now as they would have been referred to back then. And I think the fact that they're so present within the actual stadium, and I would like to think that players do see that and realise the magnitude of the club that they play for. And I would like to think that some of these musings do still sort of leak down into the ethos of, like, the backroom staff and how they, you know, handle the players and do their job as well. So yeah, I think it's sort of hard not to have a kind of lasting impact and influence when you've been, like, just such a massive success.
Yeah. Is that something you guys would agree with, Frankie?
Yeah, I think that what he achieved will always have influence over the club, and that will always be held up as the pinnacle of what we've done. You know, the spirit of Jock Stein will sort of hang around Celtic forever. I think a few others have touched on some comments made recently by Paul Lambert regarding the Moy checking phone quote unquote scandal, and it letting Jock Stein down. I think stuff like that, like, it verges on silly. I mean, it is silly to me. Not everything that we do now has to be like in honour of Jock Stein for what happened during his time with us. You know, he's a legend, not just at Celtic, but in football overall. He's a legend of the sport, and considering all the factors at play and what we did in the 67 season, getting us a second European Cup final, that is huge. And it's, I think, it's different times now. You know, football is very different in pretty much every way, and I wouldn't ever think that Stein should be held up as an example for managers coming in to live up to now. Certainly they can get some drive from what he did and everything, but yeah, he will always have influence over us. And I always remember my granddad telling me how sad he was when he left and when Jock Stein died even. I don't fully know the extent of the issues that were there when Jock Stein left Celtic. I believe the gist was that he wanted to retain some involvement with the team, and Celtic didn't really offer that to him, and so he decided to go, which is entirely fair enough. You know, I think if we felt we had something to give somewhere in our work, but the belief wasn't there or the chance wasn't there to let that happen, then we would have something to think about. I don't think it says anything about his relationship with the club or anything like that, but my granddad certainly was devastated when Jock Stein left, and given how long he was there and everything, it's a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, I think what you said is really interesting about that kind of, obviously, when you've got a club with the history of Celtic and then you've got someone with the legacy of someone like Jock Stein, it's really about, like, that balance between taking all the good stuff about that and the ethos of that without letting it kind of hold you back almost in a way for, like, what you might want to do in the future and what new people coming in might want to do, or, you know, or, like you said, use it as a kind of something to beat current squad members with, because we don't want to dwell on that, but do you know what I mean? It is about a bit of a balance, and like I've certainly worked not at football clubs but organizations where, you know, what you were kind of becomes the thing rather than what you want to be. Ruth, you're nodding.
No, yeah, I totally agree with that, and I agree with Frankie that becomes like a source of ridicule if you're going to be applying that to Moy looking at his phone and things like that. But I don't think you can underestimate like how big a figure Jock Steen is in our history. And like Frankie said as well, like that's, Jock Steen was at the heart of so many stories I was told as a child, either from my grand or from my dad. And in terms of their lives, he's still held up as the pinnacle. Mm. And of course he would be when you were there for all of those achievements. It must be so hard comparing anything that's happening now to what you were achieving then, and the figure that Jock Steen was. And I think, like Erin said, I was kind of struggling to think of my five features like right away. But then when you start looking back through managers, it becomes a lot easier. And I think the thing about Jock Steen that you can't overlook is that he took a group of underachieving players who hadn't won anything, and then within 2 years they won the European Cup. Like that is totally unprecedented in terms of your ability to inspire a team, your man management, the coaching that you were implementing, and the belief that he was able to give to those, that group of players. And I think that's something that you would want to see within our next manager or within any manager, is the ability to take a team and make it your team and get the best out of all of those players without having to have a blank check that Celtic just can't afford to do. And that's definitely something that Jock Steen embodied. I think there was like one player in that European Cup winning side that Jock Steen had signed. I think it was Willie Wallace. But beyond that, that team was there in its entirety. And it was just that Jock Steen was able to get the best out of them. And obviously that's a remarkable achievement to be able to do that over the course of 2 years.
Yeah, really amazing. And like just every story you hear about him being so ahead of his time and bringing in, you know, things like training on the pitch with a ball and stuff rather than just focusing on the fitness and stuff, and doing stuff that other coaches just weren't doing at the time when he first started working with clubs in Scotland. It's just kind of amazing. And someone like that, I guess, doesn't come along every, you know, they're not easy to find. So having him there, you know, does leave this kind of huge like shoes to fill, I suppose. We will move on from that. We've kind of written the names of a few managers because, as I said, based on our age and stage of Celtic fandom, these were the ones that kind of stood out as people we might want to focus on talking about. And we will miss people out, and I'm sure we might touch on other managers. But the next person I wanted to talk about was Martin O'Neill. And I've literally written in my notes, just talk about why everyone loves Martin O'Neill so much. Because as when I first started you know, watching football and taking an interest in Celtic, and then it just kind of gradually dawned on me that there was just this kind of universal, like real, like affection for Martin O'Neill. Like, obviously I'm married to someone who absolutely loves him and idolizes him, but it goes a little bit further than that. And I wonder, Erin, I know you're a little bit young for the Martin O'Neill era, but Frankie and Ruth, what you can talk, basically answer my question: why does everyone love Martin O'Neill so much? Apart from the jumping, obviously taken as red.
Just the jumping, that's it. Question answered. Thanks.
He was, I mean, in my lifetime, I would say the John Barnes era was the first real sort of tangible memories I have of a Celtic manager. And what Martin O'Neill did after that, as I mentioned the other week, like my first game against Rangers was a demolition derby, and in O'Neill's first season, that was his first game against them actually. And I think he completely restored a sense of pride in Celtic fans, and winning the treble, you know, after the season prior to that, we were in such a real mess after Barnes, and I don't think anyone in their wildest dreams would have ever imagined it was possible for us to go and win the amount of trophies that we did, which in a way makes it so different to, although the trebles that we've won in more recent times are absolutely incredible, like it's mad in itself saying trebles, like plural, But we've gone into those seasons the absolute sort of dominant force, to the point where the expectation is to be getting more than just the league, for me certainly. And you know, he completely just, I mean, looking back at his first crack at the Champions League, it was in his second season we like shat it in the UEFA Cup the season before that. And there's a moment that really stands out for me. I think his post-match interview from the Juventus game in the Champions League, where they were awarded that incredibly dubious penalty, and he absolutely, I wouldn't say he loses it, but he reacts in that interview as though he was a fan. He kept saying, you know, we were extraordinary, extraordinary, we were magnificent. And, you know, he could not get his head around us losing to a decision like that. And there's an occasion where losing the head a bit in these interviews makes sense. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Celtic were great in that game. It was a shocking decision. I think a lot of people, when they saw how he felt, they felt seen, like Celtic fans felt seen in his reaction. He was so passionate, but in such a way that didn't, like, passion can maybe sometimes not translate to others as passion, but maybe as, I don't want to say anger or being unhinged or anything, but I feel like his passion was infectious, and he gave our players the confidence to compete at the top, top level. And that is like invaluable in a Celtic manager. And that's going back to what Ruth was saying about Jock Stein as well. You know, you take a group of players who individually they might not have incredible skill levels or anything like that, but under the right manager with the right coaching, they can just elevate them to a level that no one really would have imagined. And that was O'Neill for me. He was great.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds, listening to you talk about it and saying that bit, I really, where you said the fans felt seen. So it's like almost like there's something about that congruence with the support and the club, and kind of having that understanding of where the fans are at and where the squad is at, and that kind of all aligning somehow, and being able to, like, I guess, read that and understand it and, you know, reflect it back to fans, which is always going to make people love you, I guess.
Totally.
Yeah. Ruth.
I couldn't agree more with every word that Frankie said there. And that Juventus interview, like, I cannot watch that without a little tear in my eye, because as Frankie said, it just was so aligned with how you felt after that game. And I think that maybe Martin O'Neill doesn't appear charismatic in the traditional sense of the word. Like, maybe he wouldn't be the first picture that comes to your head when you think of charisma, but he was one of the most charismatic people I've ever encountered in football. Just that he demanded that respect from the players and from the fans. And you were just, like, as I say, you were fully willing to give yourself over to him as your man, because he just inspired such confidence. And as Frankie says, it was just, again, that turnaround point that, you know, confidence was low amongst the players and the fan base. And Martin O'Neill, in his first season, in that winning that treble in the demolition derby, just allowed you to feel like it was okay to have belief in Celtic again, and that your belief was warranted. And in terms of the turnaround from, like, losing the league by like 21 points the season before, I think, and then winning it by 15 in his first season, like, that's just huge in terms of turning that around. And obviously he was backed by the board in terms of some of the players he was able to bring in, but on the whole, he was working with the same squad of players, and it was just being able to get the best out of them. And, you know, that first season obviously gets a lot of attention, and then Seville gets a lot of attention as well. But, you know, like, the whitewash of Rangers was a massive moment as well. And just his whole tenure, I mean, his last season obviously wasn't quite as good, but just his time at Celtic is just such a good memory for most Celtic fans. And, you know, those memories are so important, especially in times like this when maybe you don't have that same positivity. Being able to look back on an era like that and just having that glow about it, it was just so important. And that belief that he inspired was just amazing. And I remember that even being a child, that you just saw him on TV and he made you feel good, which, it's great.
It makes the word that keeps just pinging into my head when you're talking is just like trust. Like, he was able to just get people to trust him. And that would seem to be something that's really important. Erin, have you got anything to add just from...
No, I am. The way that Frankie and Ruth speak about Martin is just what I've got from my dad. Like, the way he speaks to Martin O'Neill is just so highly. And although, I mean, I think I was 3 when Martin O'Neill came in, so I really, like, maybe 7 or 8. But he was here, so I really can't remember much at all. But that doesn't mean I feel, like, any less warm about him when I hear him speaking, or I watch back, like, something like The Road to Seville or anything like that. I still hold him in such high regard. And I think the way we speak about how the fans felt seen, I think that's so important. And it feels miles away from where we are now, just because the way we're kind of getting treated by, I keep coming, I said a lot when we talk about Lennon, but I keep coming back to it.
I know, but I mean, that is the reality that we're living in as well, Erin.
Yeah, I know, but I just feel like we're talking about how it's nice to have a break from it all, like, but it's just so hard to avoid, isn't it?
I mean, the other thing to just interject as well is that obviously the relationship between the manager and the fans is completely different at the moment, because you're not in the stadium, which throws a massive, doesn't really matter who, you know, whoever was manager would be struggling with, well, potentially struggling with the relationship with the fans, just for that matter.
Yeah, I suppose so. But also on a similar note, I think it's really frustrating. I mean, it's kind of changed in recent weeks, sort of. I think it's really frustrating when we're just in utter turmoil and Lennon comes out and makes out as if nothing's wrong. Like, I couldn't feel less seen when that happens. And that's regardless of whether we were at the grounds or not, because Lennon's done that for, even in his first tenure, he'd done that as well. And it's really disheartening when the manager seems to be in a totally different page from the fans, or like not even an acknowledgement of the way that the fans feel. Because I feel like, obviously, we always kind of say, and it's been said in other podcasts, that don't read too much into what Lennon says at pressers and stuff. And it does get it tight at the press conferences and stuff, and I appreciate that. And but sometimes if he gets asked about sentiments from the support, about whether he should still be in post and stuff like that, he's just automatically very dismissive and says, oh, there's no ground for that. But really, I don't think he understands, like, the lack of support for him at the minute is, like, palpable. And it's just an absolute kick in the teeth when you're like, is your finger so far off the pulse of the support that you're not even, maybe as aware of, but the fact he's just dismissing it straight away, it's like, I think that's really important for the next manager. I'm not saying he's got to be, like, all over the support and, like, a pure, like, uber Celtic, like, do you know what I mean? But just someone that's actually got their finger on the pulse and is aware of, like, sentiment among the support and acknowledges that, even if not in agreement.
Yeah, I think it's something as well, like, that trust and communication thing almost go hand in hand, because if the communication is off, like, we've all talked, we are now talking about the current situation, but we've all talked about what's going on at Lennox Town, what's the training like. We're all speculating. None of us actually know really at all. You know, things have passed around WhatsApp groups, etc., etc. It's just when you, if you don't trust what you're hearing and it doesn't align with what you're seeing, and then there are all these just disconnects, it's when that communication completely fails to reflect what you're experiencing that I think the trust is likely to disappear somewhat, or at least wane somehow.
I guess, like, there's also now, you have much greater access in terms of what's going on. And, like, when Frankie and I were fangirling over Martin O'Neill, you weren't able to go on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram and see what the team were doing. So you had a lot less access. And the communication point obviously has become more important the more access you have. And it just seems like maybe Lennon isn't aligned with that, but obviously for the time that Martin O'Neill was there, like, I think the Juventus point that Frankie raised is really important. But just even like Hendrik's last game and that interview that they gave together, and like Martin O'Neill puts his arms around Hendrik and says, like, the pleasure has been all ours, and it just felt like, you know, welling up saying that out loud, but, you know, like, it just felt like he was a spokesperson for you as a Celtic fan. Like, he said the things you wanted him to be saying, and it felt aligned, and that trust point is so important. I remember, like, Chris Sutton's first game for Celtic, and I turned to my dad and said, is he a good player, Dad? At Chris Sutton, and my dad was like, well, I don't rate him, to be honest, but Martin knows better than me. And that, you know, when Chris Sutton went on to become a bit like a great player, I was like, well, clearly can't have any trust in my dad anymore. I have to give it all to Martin O'Neill. So maybe that's part of the point. But you did just, like, players came in and you trusted that he knew what he was doing, that he had an eye for a player, that he knew the best thing for the team. And like, yeah, you just, you went all in for them, and that was like great to feel that about your manager.
Yeah. I mean, we did, it's kind of a bit of a roller coaster ride, because one of the things that we were starting to get a little bit more on the negative side of things until Ruth gamely lifted us back. But I'm going to just dive us back into despair, because I was going to ask you what your kind of, like, we've talked about our manager highlights, and I'm really interested to find out what, let's current manager aside, let's park that over here, what your manager kind of negative memories are. What's your kind of manager memory that sticks out as being a bit not as good, Ruth?
I've actually written down two separate ones. But first of all, I went for the dream team era, so Barnes and Dalgleish. And obviously losing Henrik was a massive blow to John Barnes, and it was a massive blow to me as a child, with Henrik Larsson being my hero. And that obviously brought an air of bleakness to the season that would have been there regardless. But I think the Barnes and Dalgleish thing stands out because it never should have happened. And we've like been talking a lot lately about the way that managers are appointed by the board. And I think that John Barnes' point is just giving it to a novice manager on the back of Dalgleish saying that he took two training sessions and looked really good is absurd. Like, that is wild to give someone a manager job on that. And I think it's just because it shouldn't have happened, and it just was such a left field choice that makes it just a really bad experience. And also, my brother, was his second team growing up was Liverpool, and he loved John Barnes as a kid. Like, he properly loved him, to the extent that one time my dad was going on a course for work, and we went to the train to see him off, and like, my dad gave me a kiss and gave Liam a kiss, and then in front of everyone, Liam lifted up his John Barnes Pro Star and made my dad kiss it on the head before we got on. And like, everybody saw him just kissing this tiny John Barnes. So like, that's how much my brother loved John Barnes. So I think it was a big personal blow to my brother that it didn't work out for John Barnes. And I said before, my first game was that Leeds friendly, and that was when John Barnes was manager. And I remember my dad saying that he was spending the whole game trying to work out what formation we were meant to be playing, because he just couldn't get his head around what was happening at all. I think that kind of sums up John Barnes's tenure there. So the fact it was a big personal blow for my wee brother, and the fact it never should have happened, meant that that's probably my main standout one.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Erin, have you got something different to talk about?
Yeah, I do. Sorry to bring it up. I'm so sorry.
I asked. So you're allowed.
This is still sore for people.
I know.
Under the current climate, the rat leaving was a massive, just massive blow for me.
I wasn't now, not expecting you to say that.
Yeah. I mean, it's just anger now, but at the time I was devastated, because I genuinely bought into all the nonsense. Like, we spoke about it in the chat a few weeks ago, remember? Just the absolute...
Like, in hysterics of it.
We were crying, like, calling it the Rogers era, because it's just chaotic. Like, I'd bought into it all. I was, like, told to Celtic since he was a wee boy, and he said all this stuff, like, Celtic is, like, the honour of my life, and I want to be here as long as I can. And I bought into all that. I was like, oh, brilliant, and... We were flying, obviously. There's just this airy professionalism around the club. You're just, obviously, like, you're always proud to be a Celtic fan, but really you're just like, oh, check us. Rodgers is manager, like, tap dancer, the Scottish football, like, Scottish football. And then it just, it turns around and he's off. But I remember I was in my fourth year at uni, and it was, like, my last bout of exams, and they were obviously, like, really important. I had to pass them all to, like, get a degree, essentially, and I remember sitting in the library, and there'd been rumours for a few days, like, oh, Rodgers was in the box, like, you might believe. And I was like, what a lot of absolute nonsense. Now, in hindsight, I thought the same about the Tierney rumours, and they turned out to be true as well. But I was like, oh, crap, that'll not happen. I was in the library studying, and then it came through on my phone, and I was like, you are kidding me on. I was like, I can't believe it. Like, where does this leave us? And because I was saying for days before, like, if he leaves at the end of the season, fine, like, okay, but it wouldn't leave us in the lurch.
Yeah.
Wow. I just, like, I get nothing done, like, genuinely that day and for a few days after, because I was just like, what? I was just dumbfounded by it all. I was like, how on earth? And I think that was probably one of the more, like, the most recent kind of letdowns that I'd had. And I mean, can we talk about some of the nonsense, like, we were talking about a few weeks ago, like the Danny McGrain stuff, like, well, I was going to do an accent, I can't. He was like, as long as I'm here, you're here. He was making out Danny McGrain, who's a club legend, making out he's basically chasing around Lennox Town, kicking a stone, waiting for confirmation. He's still got a job! An insult. And what was, there was another one, this, what was it he said?
When he said he someone stopped him in the Clyde Tunnel.
Yeah, the Clyde Tunnel one, yeah. Like,
thanks for what you've done for Scottish football, Brendan. And I thought at the time, you were like, oh, that's great. What a guy that Brendan Rodgers is.
We all just ate it up. We were just so right in amongst it. And I think that's how, I think part of all our communal rage about it now, as a support, I think some of it actually stems from embarrassment. The fact we were just done over. Like, we all bought into it, like, his wee book and all that. We're like, wow, like, this is, like, Mr. Celtic. I know. What a lot of shite.
But it's like, you know, the analogy was made at the time and it still stands. It's like that bad boyfriend thing or bad partner thing of, like, being with someone who, you know, obviously you're just madly in love with, and it's only once they leave or do something horrible and dastardly that you go, oh God, they were awful. And all your friends go, yeah. Yeah,
the ultimate fuckboy. Brendan Rodgers is the ultimate fuckboy. And it was exactly like that. I was saying to Erin and Frankie that, like, when Brendan was manager, John, my partner, was saying, like, look, Ruth, I watched the Being Liverpool documentary. This is a total act, as we were talking about earlier in the chat. He's a spoofer. He's made all this up. Like, he's just doing this to get you on side. And I was like, John, you don't understand the bond that Brendan and I have. This is, and then when he left, I was like, damn it, John was right the whole time. And I, like, had a highlight reel on my Instagram, which was, like, all Celtic related. And I remember I went through it and, like, deleted all the photos of Brendan that was in it, really angry, like he was my ex-boyfriend. And just, like, as Erin said, like, it was like a personal blow. It was so upsetting when he left, and it's hard to admit that now, but just got it.
You know what really made me laugh? Remember that thread that came out the other night about being out with Premier League managers? I've went and gone up to see the Brendan Rodgers one.
Yeah,
I keep thinking back to, right, I'll read out. Beers and pizza at the bowling alley. He bumps into an old pal and buys 6 grams of speed. Next thing you know, you're 3 pills deep at a happy hardcore Raven Peterborough. Brendan's flushed, manically gurning face, covered in fluorescent glitter. 38 hours later, you're still on it. Like, I can't tell you how many times this week I've been on, like, Teams for work, and I've just thought about Brendan's flushed, manically gurning face.
Great.
By the way, we'll post that thread again. I'll share it or something, because if people haven't seen, I'm sure lots of people have seen it. But if you haven't, it's something. It's quite something. The thing about the Brendan Rodgers thing for me, because it was so close to me, sort of just coming on board as a Celtic fan. Like, I was still, like, learning how. I still am, but at that point, I was, like, really green, and I was still learning how it all works. And, like, I just didn't understand, like, that was a thing that you could do. Like, I knew, I'd heard of, like, managers getting sacked halfway through a season or things, you know, but to just leaving and going somewhere else, I was like, that doesn't happen, does it? And I don't know if that's, you know, were you guys as blindsided by that as I was in, like, that particular aspect of it? Like, does it happen ever?
I think that he was the first one who's left us to go to another club. It's not like he left and was out of a job for a bit. Like, he purposely, and what, this is something that really got to me the most, he'd barely been out the door 10 seconds and he had the fucking custom made blue Leicester suit with a tie and everything. It's like, do you know that, that really, really got to me. And then there was one point, I think it was last year, he did some interview where he was, like, smarming himself off and just, like, he was like, oh, addressing Celtic fans as if we asked. And he was like, you know, now do you understand why I had to leave now? You know, because he was doing quite well. It's just like, fuck off. You know, I can't get over how much he just loves himself, do you know?
Oh my God.
I feel like such a fucking idiot for being, like you say, being so wrapped up in that whole charade while he was here. And when we were talking in the chat about it, I was laughing so much. I went back and looked at the video. 10,000 fans turned up to welcome him, and he's like twirling his scarf around and everything. Like,
oh. That's killed me off. That's too much.
In the middle of the park, in a sunny podium, like,
I couldn't believe it. I was like, God, like, I remember how I felt at that time, and it's like, he made us look like fucking mugs. God,
I know. And as you say, Frank, it's just that, like, he didn't just leave. He left and took all, like, our backroom staff with him as well. Like, totally left us in the lurch. And then after that, was still, like, trying to be like, oh, I still love you, though. Like, oh, Celtic's still where my heart is. And you're like, if you're going to do that, never have the name Celtic in your mouth again. Why are you even still talking about us? Just fucking leave us alone. Like, you're gone now. And it's just the fact that he's still talking about it and, like, still wants us to love him. When he could have left at the end of the season, and I would have been upset, but I wouldn't have hated him. But he chose to do that and, like, still thinks that he should command the respect and adoration of the fans. And, like, no.
Yeah, it comes back, that just all comes back to that trust thing again, doesn't it? And, like, the fact that you did all buy into it. We did, you know, I did at the end of his tenure, totally bought into it. And I was like, everyone says this guy's great. This is amazing. I'm so kind of thrilled that, like, he's the manager. And then, yeah, I genuinely was so confused when he left. Like, confusion was one of the biggest. Yeah. I was just like, I don't know what's happening. Why is this? What? Because I and it still happens to me today. Like, sometimes I don't know what reactions to have to things because I'm still learning. Like, I've got not that much experience as a football fan. So it's really interesting when I'm sometimes seeing immediate reactions from lots of people where I take a little bit of time sometimes to, like, absorb stuff and go, what does this mean? Which is kind of why it's difficult when, you know, whether it's manager rumors or player rumors or whatever, like, Chris will fire rumors at me. And I'm like, I don't want to know about rumors. I just want to know about stuff when it's happened. And then I will react to that because otherwise it's just too much. We're kind of, like, coming nicely to the end here. I was going to talk about Ronnie Dyler for a bit. Has anyone got anything burning that they would like to say about Ronnie Dyler, apart from the stuff we've already said about his kind of obvious passion and enthusiasm for the club?
I think that going back to the point about fans feeling seen, even though Ronnie Dyler had many faults, it's important to remember that Celtic fans can't just feel properly seen by Celtic men, you know, people affiliated with the club. And I feel like his tenure was an example of how him not having the benefit as a history with the club always sort of loomed over him. And I absolutely think that Dyler had to go when he went. Like, it was a sensible thing to do. But I also think that a lot of fans have a fondness or a respect for him because he genuinely was just out of his depth as Celtic manager. And we know that he wasn't intended to be brought in as number one. We know that he had a lot of big ideas, like, regarding how entertaining he wanted his football to be. And he was, like, so into his fitness and how progressive he wanted things to run behind the scenes. And we've heard a few things now about that from former players and, like, the open goal interviews and stuff, of course. And I remember watching some, like, lecture he did on tactics, and it was about an hour long or something, and I thought, my God, like, this guy's got it. Like, the breadth of his knowledge seemed to be so wide, and going from how Lennon had left us in the end up, it really felt like we were onto something, but it just wasn't to be. And he did have some positives, like, he got us out of the Europa League groups, which was really quite an occasion because we hadn't done that before, and a lot of our players had really some pivotal moments in their development under Dyler, like when you think about Tierney, Forrest, McGregor, Van Dijk went on to be one of the best players in the world. You know, his time with us had some positive lasting effects, which is good. And he did play his role in the current title run and everything, but he just wasn't the right fit. And I think he knew that in the end, but he's always come across so well in interviews, and I think he was really grateful for the time that he had with us. But I've said plenty of times that I was so sad when he left, not because I felt he didn't have to, because, as I say, he did, but I was so sad that it didn't work out for him. Like, I wanted it to work out for him as much as for us. But, you know, it just, these things happen. It just, it wasn't the right decision to get him.
Have to be realistic at the end of the day.
Yeah.
That was perfect, thank you. Everything I wrote down about Ronnie, you covered there, but you were so articulate. I loved that wee monologue about Ronnie. I'm going to listen back to that.
I just have feelings about Ronnie Dyla. I just wanted to give him a hug when he was away. I was like, you know, we don't think too badly of you, but yeah.
You can't see it in the Zoom, but we've just started putting pictures up on the wall and there's a massive picture of him just above my head.
Oh my god.
Ronnie Roaring.
We're going to finish on a little thing that Erin has prepared. I don't know where we got this idea from. Could have been anywhere. But
I mean, it's really just to piss off the midweek bounce even more. So sort of halfway.
I wasn't going to be that explicit about it, Erin, but yeah, that's it. it's which manager said it? Which Celtic manager said it? So I'm going to hand over to you because you're going to run this particular bit of the show.
Cool. What I actually done when starting the podcast, I didn't put my glasses on, so when we start this, I could go full Anne Robinson. I'll keep a note of the scores. But basically, I've got 10 quotes here from Celtic managers, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to read aloud the quote, and then I'll give you the option of 3 managers.
Okay.
I will come to each of you.
Okay.
And each of you give me a guess of which one said it, right?
Okay. Right, we're ready.
Best of luck. Responding to criticism, which manager said the best way to keep your critics quiet is to win games of football? Was it Gordon Strachan, Brendan Rodgers, or Neil Lennon? Ruth, I'll come to you first.
I'm going to go Gordon Strachan.
Okay. Frankie?
I think it was Rodgers.
Okay.
The rat, sorry.
Do you know what? I'm going to say Neil Lennon just so that we've covered them all.
Okay. That was Rodgers. Well done, Frankie. That was in 2016 in an interview with the Celtic Underground. But if I didn't see it beforehand, I actually would have thought it was Strachan as well. Okay, 1 point to Frankie.
Frankie can't win another quiz.
I know!
I definitely am not going to win the quiz.
Come on, Claire.
You might surprise yourself. I said last night I tried it with my dad and he was a bit of a mixed bag. So
yeah, right. Number 2.
About how the club treated them as their tenure ended, who said, "Sometimes I had to fight more against my own people than against my own opponents. Jock Steen, Wim Janssen, or John Barnes?
Jock Steen.
Okay. Jock Steen for Claire. Frankie?
John Barnes.
Okay. Ruth?
I don't have a strong leaning, so just to keep the vibe going, I'm going to go Janssen, just down the middle.
Well, Ruth, it was Wim Janssen. It was in 1990 after things turned very sour. So, 1 each to Ruth and Frankie.
I'm coming for you now, Frankie.
That's it. Let's get tight.
My tail.
So, the third quote. Talking about the decision-making of officials. This is, I think, might be quite an easy one. It depends. Talking about the decision-making of officials, which manager said, "If you're good enough, the referee doesn't matter"? Billy McNeil, Jock Steen, or Gordon Strachan? Frankie?
Jock Steen.
Okay.
Billy McNeil.
Okay.
I thought it was Jock Steen, so I'm breaking tradition to go Jock Steen again.
Jock Steen.
I have scored no points.
Listen, we're only 3 questions in, the night is young.
There's still time.
Exactly. Okay. This one my dad struggled with a wee bit. Bit of a longer one, but it was just, I thought it was sort of nonsense. Anyway, which manager described his managing style as follows? I'm a manager with a belief. I try and manage on a philosophy of playing, a philosophy of life. I feel however you live your life, whatever you do away from the training pitch, however you apply yourself, will bring the benefits. That's either Tony Mowbray, Brendan Rodgers, or Joseph Venglos. Ruth, I'll start with you. I feel like you've been last the past few times.
I think it's Mowbray.
Okay.
Mowbray.
Claire? Mowbray as well. Thank you.
I also think it's Mowbray.
Well done all.
Yay, got a point.
Mowbray used to say some weird stuff.
Oh yeah, he was. And he was like, there's positives and the negative of the result.
I remember that.
I'm actually a bit of a philosopher.
When I was looking up some of the quotes last night, I was like, this guy was off his head. So question five. Talking to and about the media, which manager said, fans can be easily manipulated by you. You can start wars, you people, never mind going for managers. Was it Neil Lennon, John Barnes, or Gordon Strachan?
John Barnes.
Claire? John Barnes. Thank you.
Gordon Strachan.
Okay.
I also thought it was Gordon Strachan.
Gordon Strachan.
Of course it was.
That was, I think, in lead up to Champions League qualifier against Spartak in 2007. But we know that.
I should really learn my lesson not to just jump in with like a guess really early doors. I should just listen to the others and just.
This is exciting because it's in Frank here on an even keel at the minute. Okay. Six. This one made me laugh. Which manager said, I will calm down when I retire or die? A. Tommy Burns. B. Martin O'Neill. Or C. Liam Brady. Who wants to go first? I'll give you the chance.
I've got no idea, so I will guess.
Okay.
And I will say Martin O'Neill.
Okay.
That's what I was going to guess.
You can guess the same thing.
What were the choices?
I'm sticking with Martin.
What were the choices? Is
Tommy Burns, Martin O'Neill, or Liam Brady?
I'm just going to say Liam Brady just to be different.
Okay. Well, of course, it was Martin O'Neill. Five all for Frankie and Ruth. Claire, you're on one. Okay. Respect. Seven. Which former manager said of Peter Lowell, he is intelligent, modern, and has a good track record? Brendan Rodgers, Neil Lennon, or Ronnie Dyla?
Brendan Rodgers. Okay. I've done it again. I've leapt in with no knowledge.
You've not leapt in. There was a pause. Frankie, what do you think?
It sounds, I can imagine Rodgers saying it.
Yeah.
In my head, it sounds like a Brendan Rodgers way of saying it, so yeah.
I'm going Rodgers as well. This has a rat written all over it.
Okay. Sorry, Dyla?
Oh!
No!
I would have thought that as well. It's such a shock. I think it wasn't long after he actually came to Celtic in 2014.
God, I'm sorry to Dyla for saying
that. Me too, I said I had rat written all over it. And it does
really sound like a Rodgers thing. You would never imagine Ronnie Dyla just being on the board side like that. But anyway.
You got me there with that one.
Yeah, so no points for that one. Okay. Which manager made the following observation? You're told about Celtic's quote-unquote paranoia, but it's true. We are hard done by. Religiously and politically, there are people against us. Was it Tommy Burns, Liam Brady, or Neil Lennon?
My first thought was Neil Lennon, so I'm going to go with that before you gave the options.
Ruth, Frankie, who wants to go first?
What were the other two? Burns,
Brady, or Lennon?
I'm going to go Burns.
Okay. Thank you.
I will say Lennon.
Liam Brady.
Oh.
Because that was another... My dad, when I tried it with him last night, had said Lennon as well. But yeah, I think I'm sure Brady was Irish as well. I think he came and sort of realised the magnitude of like the hatred towards the Irish in Glasgow. So on 5 each for Frankie and Ruth and 1 for Claire. So this is the 9th one. Which manager said, Celtic these days is such a massive business, but one fact that will remain constant is the club's supporters. They are magnificent, the best in football. Tommy Burns, Martin O'Neill or Billy McNeil?
I'm going to say Martin O'Neill because he loved saying magnificent.
That was what, after you saying about Juventus as well.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm saying Martin O'Neill because, yeah, because of the timing.
Yeah, I'm going Martin as well.
You sure?
Well, clearly not now.
Just try to give you the hand. It was Billy McNeil.
Oh,
man.
Frankie, we were flying. We've crumbled.
We've not got points in like 4 goals.
I know, we need points on number 10. Come on, girls.
I've got a number 10, but I've also got a bonus question in case we don't get a winner out this one. Because it is quite hard.
Oh, it's a tiebreaker. I almost want to step away now and just watch the tiebreak unfold.
It won't get away that easy. So, number 10. This is quite hard because all these managers were before Oliver Times. Which manager said, in relation to observations that were being made about religion in Scottish football, men soon found out that broad-mindedness, which is the real stamp of the good Christian, existed at Celtic Park, where a man is judged by his football alone. A. Willie Mailey. B. Jock Stein. Or C. Jeremy Brodie. This is a hard one, I'll admit.
Willie Mailey.
Okay. Frankie?
Can I hear the options again?
Yes. Willie Mailey, Jock Stein, or Jimmy McGrory?
I'm going for Willie Mailey.
Okay.
I'm going for Willie Mailey as well.
Well done. All of you got it. It was Willie Mailey.
Willie Mailey.
Oh, is his name? Right. So we must go to the tiebreaker now.
Oh no, let's just make it a draw. I don't want to lose in a tiebreak.
What we'll do is I'll say it and then if you just shout your name. So I think Claire, it will just need to be between us and Frankie, unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely. I literally have 2 points.
So if you just shout your name and then whoever shouts first. So speaking about their upbringing, which manager said, we were in orange, but we were staunch? I'm not getting answered. You're not getting options this time, just need this.
A former manager.
Frankie.
Yep. Yes, Frankie.
Jock Stein.
Well done. There's Jock Stein.
Well done, Frankie.
Well done, Frankie. She takes it again.
Frankie reigns victorious over the deep divers quiz. Well done,
Frankie. I was thinking Dalglish, and then I was like, that's going to be too niche because he's an interim. Well done.
That was a great quiz. Well done, Erin. Thank you.
Well done, Erin.
That was really fun. Yeah.
Not a problem. Well done, guys. Great effort.
Did we do better than your dad?
Yes. I think my dad honestly got like 4. I'm not joking. But to be fair, I did like absolutely just. It wasn't on these words, and I was just like, I need to try this on you.
It must be really interesting as well to just look back through all those quotes and kind of untangle them, and like we were all surprised by some of them.
Yeah, and Stephen, I was looking into it yesterday. Some of the Rogers ones just made me so furious.
Do you think we've kind of like through all of that, including the quiz, like I've kind of made some notes and I've underlined some qualities that like, because that was what our stated aim was at the beginning. And I guess they were always going to be quite general. What I've got is passion, getting the best out of players, which I don't know if there's a better word for that, like motivational or something. Trust and confidence, communication and experience. That's mm-hmm. the 5 things that I've underlined as I've been scribbling down. Do you think that you'd agree with that assessment of what you might be looking for in a Celtic manager / the next Celtic manager?
Yeah, I think that's fair. The only other thing I wrote down just when we were talking about Diala was like realism. I think it's just quite far from what we've got with Lennon at the minute, and the fact that Diala, who put his hands up and said, this isn't working, and left. I'd actually made a note of what he said. There have been some disappointments when we have not achieved what we had hoped for. I'm realistic and honest enough to admit that. I was like, how refreshing is that compared to at the moment? And I think that realism sort of comes back to what we're talking about, how a manager has to have a sense of how the fans feel, and the fans need to feel seen. So I think being like realistic and sometimes sort of at your own expense is quite important as well.
Yeah, it's like a bit of humility as well, of like being able to recognise when things aren't.
Yeah, that was the only other thing.
Actually,
that
really that's okay, sorry. You go.
I think that humility point is tied to what I was saying about Brendan a couple of podcasts ago as well, about that like adaptability and pragmatism point and flexibility, which we don't have with Lennon and we didn't have with the Rat, in terms of this like blind loyalty to a system and not being able to change that, which doesn't really work when you're a Celtic manager, because you can be playing like a non-league side in a cup, then playing a Hamilton, a Rangers, and then playing Champions League side. So you need that adaptability to be able to compete and be successful at all those levels. And that pragmatism point would be something I would absolutely be looking for. But I think that's like heavily tied to humility and being able to admit when your system isn't working and changing it up.
Yeah. We've kind of mentioned more than five there, but I think that's kind of an interesting examination of like a brief period in time. And well, we went all the way back. Willy Mailey featured, so.
Exactly.
I'm sure people might have their own views on what would make the ideal Celtic manager and what qualities they would look for. We are going to go. I'm going to go and watch Scotland. Maybe qualify. I don't want to say anything. I don't want to jinx it. There's a lot of tense vibes in this house. So I might just go make some dinner, pour a glass of wine and just let it happen. Let it unfold. This has been really interesting for me, because all of this is a real good learning experience. Thank you so much. Thanks, Frankie.
Thank you very much. It was good fun.
Thank you, Erin, for the top and the tail of the show.
No, I've actually just noticed that everyone will be sick of hearing my voice at this point.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, I'm just going to go full glory hunter. The other week I was like, oh, I don't care about international football, but I didn't actually realise the magnitude of this game. And I'm like, why not? Probably watch it as well.
And Ruth Boyle, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you. I loved that. It was very fun.
Yeah, it was good. We will be hopefully back with you next week, seeing what will unfold. The other thing that I also just wanted to flag up, because it's a bit, Celtic are playing, there's a Celtic derby at the weekend, a Glasgow derby rather. Celtic are playing Rangers on Sunday the 15th. And I heard today, and I haven't confirmed it yet, but I think you can do pay-per-view on Rangers TV if anyone is wanting to watch it. So I'm going to put details of that up on the Flick chat and on Twitter and things like that, but that is happening. Anyway, this has been The Deep Dive. I've been Claire Wilde. It's been very enjoyable, and we will speak to you very soon.